I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Wednesday, April 7th. So in mid-March, New York City Congresswomen Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Nidia Velasquez, along with New Jersey's Bob Menendez in the Senate, introduced a bill that would create a process for Puerto Ricans to decide to what extent the island will be a part of the United States. It's called the Puerto Rico Self-Determination Act of 2021. The question of Puerto Rico's status has been on the ballot in Puerto Rico a number of times in the past, most recently just this past November, when 52% of voters said yes in a referendum about joining the U.S. as a state. But that vote was non-binding. Now these members of Congress want to give the people of Puerto Rico more of an official say. Puerto Rico's political status is one of the topics covered in WNYC's new bilingual podcast, La Brega. So joining me now to discuss the topic and to take phone calls from Puerto Rican listeners are Alana Casanova Burgess, the host of La Brega, and a reporter and producer for WNYC's On the Media the rest of the time, and Yamimar Bonilla, professor of Puerto Rican studies and anthropology at the City University of New York, also a monthly columnist at El Nuevo Dia and incoming director of the Center for Puerto Rican Studies at Hunter College. They will also be in discussion with several other big thinkers on this topic tomorrow. You can make a note of this right from the start. Tomorrow night at 7, an event you can attend virtually by heading to tinyurl.com/Sancocho2. We'll give you that again at the end. Alana, welcome back to the show. And Professor Bonilla, welcome back to WNYC.
Hi, Brian. Good morning.
And let me start.
Hi, Brian.
Right off the bat with a listener invitation. The phones are yours in this segment, in English or in Spanish or in a mix, just as all those are welcome on the bilingual podcast La Brega that Alana hosts. So for listeners who aren't familiar with some of the history, let's start there. Alana, in the podcast, you talk about how way back in 1952, Puerto Rico adopted a new political status called the ELA, which is an acronym, ELA. They say ELA. What does it stand for and what is it actually?
Sure. It's Estado Libre Asociado, which means free associated state, which is a bit confusing, right? Because what does it mean to be associated and yet not free and yet not a state? And that is the status that Puerto Rico exists under currently. It's a status that was championed by the first elected governor of Puerto Rico, Luis Muñoz Marín. He's a very important figure in the history of this issue, and we talk about him a lot on the podcast. And he's considered the architect of this, I guess we could call it the Commonwealth status. That's another word that doesn't particularly mean much, right? Like you have the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, you have the Commonwealth of Canada. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people in the States like to call Puerto Rico a territory. It doesn't really, you know, I think those words also obscure the fact that it's a colonial relationship. The word colony makes a lot of people really uncomfortable. So, you know, but some people in the States twist themselves into pretzels to use these other words. And really, the word colony is being used more and more frequently on the island by people of all different political parties with all kinds of different opinions on the status, who are very frustrated by the status quo, the ELA, the Estado Libre Asociado, which is the current status.
Let me play a clip from the podcast. Professor Bonilla, in episode 7 of La Brega, you use a really interesting metaphor to describe the aftermath of the ELA, a Seinfeld reference in which George Costanza meets up with the parents of his deceased fiance, and he tells them he has a house in the Hamptons, and everyone knows that's not true. So let's take a listen to that clip from the podcast.
It's a two-hour drive. Once you get in that car, we are going all the way to the Hamptons.
And they all get into a car and start driving to the Hamptons. And they also all know that the others know that it's all a farce.
Almost there.
Yeah, this is the end of Long Island. Where's your house?
We go on foot from here.
All right.
All right. Professor Bonilla, why does this Seinfeld scene remind you of the ELA in Puerto Rico?
Well, so this metaphor was in some ways the product of a collaboration with the brilliant Mark Pagan, who worked on us for this episode. And he asked me if there was any pop culture reference that came to mind. And I've always been a Seinfeld fan. And for me, you know, the Ella is like a game of chicken. Because, you know, if you look at the way historians have written about it, Luis Muñoz Marin, the architect of the ELA, he was trying to kind of will this into being, even though he knew that the United States was not really ready for decolonization, was not willing to give up Puerto Rico for, you know, in terms of independence, and was also not interested in any way in making it a state. In fact, the United States, you know, government went out of its way to create an entire new category of unincorporated territories to make it clear that Puerto Rico was not on the path to statehood, that it was not an incorporated territory. And yet, despite that, they came into this agreement suggesting that Puerto Rico was going to have self-government. And I feel like both parties were pretending that this was true and pretending that they were duping each other, but everyone was in on the con in a way. Everyone knew that there was no real decolonization happening. There was no real house in the Hamptons that they were ever going to arrive at. And yet that we all get in this car and head that way. And when the road ends, it's like, well, we go on foot from here. Like we keep pretending that there is this thing. That is not really there.
And so maybe that even relates to another clip we're going to play from the podcast where, Alana, you say every couple of years we undergo these performative votes on status that are described as plebiscites or referendums, and that this issue of statehood has been coming up for decades. And sure enough, here's an archival clip that you featured in the podcast from a CBS News report in 1975.
60% of Puerto Rican families are living on incomes below the federal government's poverty level. 60% of Puerto Rico's inhabitants need food stamp help. Whatever the past virtues of the island's relations with the United States, today's troubles raise some basic questions about this system in the future. And some argue flatly, it no longer works.
Ha, 1975. So why that clip, Alana, and why do you describe all of these previous referendums as performative, and is there one that could not be?
Well, there's that clip, and we have another one, too, that's also from the 70s. You know, part of the ELA status was supposed to promise prosperity to Puerto Rico, right? Their relationship with the United States was going to mean more wealth, more investment. And even in the 1970s, I mean, you can hear it in that clip, 60% of Puerto Rican families were living on incomes below the federal government's poverty level. So even just a couple decades after the status gets introduced, that promise of wealth and prosperity is already falling flat. And then you have these, as you say, like performative plebiscites where people are voting. And yes, there was just one a few months ago where 52% of people voted for statehood. But the conversation about what these different status options will mean in practice has never been fully resolved, right? Like there are a lot of questions, and what you mentioned about the AOC self-determination bill, that is aimed at getting some of these answers on the table, right? Like what would it mean for public pensions? What would it mean for the language that we all exist in? Yarimar, can you think of any other questions? You have a bunch in your episode. There's
part of what's really great about this act too is that it forces the proponents of different status options to also develop a transition plan. Because the previous plebiscite votes, which I think Judith Butler would not like us to call them performative because that means that it actually brings into being what is performed. It's more like performance art, you know? And so these kinds of, rituals, we are presented with these options like statehood, yes or no, but we don't really know what's behind that. Like, would this yes to statehood include some kind of reparations or some kind of truth and reconciliation, you know, plan to think about, you know, the harm that has been done to Puerto Rico due to its colonial relationship? So it will be important to have that transition plan. And it also includes a plan for education. on the different status options. So that'll be really important as well, particularly given the way in which the political option of independence has been repressed on the island and criminalized. And we've been told our whole lives that that is treason, you know, and illegal to support independence. And so there's a lot of re-education that needs to be done. And the other part that's really important about this bill is that it also allows for the creation of something new. You know, Puerto Ricans keep being presented with the same options, statehood, independence. And, you know, the only time that there has been a truly, landslide vote in a plebiscite was when we were presented with the option of none of the above. You know, then people flocked to that option, because the truth is that none of the ones that exist really speak to what we have now. But one concern that I do have about it is that, a lot of people who have been talking about the bill, there was an article in Jacobin recently, et cetera, they suggest that, you know, what Puerto Ricans desire is going to be immediately enacted. And that's not quite the case. You know, Congress still has the right to reject whatever we come up with. And the other part is that it's not going to be entirely Puerto Ricans figuring this out. There's also going to be a bilateral negotiation commission that is going to involve representatives from the U.S. History tells us that in the past, things, and I know that this is something Alana is passionate about, the models that Puerto Ricans have come up with and the different, for example, when a constitution was created locally, the U.S. government intervened and took out a lot of the progressive measures that would have been included in there.
Let's get a few phone calls in here. John in the Bronx, born in Puerto Rico. He says, hi, John, you're on WNYC. Yes.
Oh, great. How are you?
Good. What you got?
Well, I just want to remind people that Puerto Rico has like 3.5 million residents, which is more than 17 states in the U.S. It has more people than Dakotas, Montana, Idaho, all of them, 17 states. So if I were a senator representing one of those states and I had a choice to make Puerto Rico a state,
I think your line dropped out. I assume you were leading toward you would vote against it if you represented one of those low population western states, right?
Of course, because they would have more representatives.
Yeah.
If you have 3.5 million people versus a state that has 200,000 people, why would I give that state power over me?
I hear you. And Professor Bonilla, this is what we hear from the Republicans all the time. And in terms of math, they have a point that the Democrats have a motivation to make Puerto Rico a state, because that would be another big state voting likely for Democrats most of the time.
Well, that is an assumption. There are a lot of folks in Puerto Rico who caution against that idea and say that, in fact, you know, a lot of Puerto Ricans are more conservative on a variety of issues, and that Puerto Rico would be more of a swing state. But, you know, I think in the end, is that really what should decide whether or not Puerto Rico should be decolonized? Is it whether it's convenient to the Democratic Party or the Republican Party? And, you know, and this, that is one of the problems that with the current public debate about Puerto Rico statehood and conflating it with Washington, D.C. statehood, is that this isn't a matter of, you know, what's good for the Electoral College. This is a matter of decolonization and human rights, you know? And that's one thing that I do think is missing in this act, is that aside from educating in Puerto Rico about the different status options, there needs to be an education campaign in the United States about its imperial history, so that U.S. folks, including these congressmen and senators, mm-hmm. who often are deeply ignorant about imperial history, so that they can get a sense of what's really at stake here.
Let's go to Malixa in Deer Park, Long Island. Malixa, you're on WNYC. Hi there.
Sí, buen día. Me encanta el show de Brian. Voy a hablar en español porque es acerca de Puerto Rico. For those of you who don't understand, I'm going to say it in Spanish because I learned Puerto Rican politics in Spanish. Well, I'll go back and forth. I think a couple of things. Yo me siento como una traidora. Yo fui a Puerto Rico. Nací y criada en Puerto Rico, fui a la Universidad de Puerto Rico. Estoy todavía inscrita como con el Partido Independentista, pero vine acá, vine a estudiar, conocí a un gringo, me casé y vivo en los suburbios. Pero como alguien que Pero como alguien que ha podido vivir en los dos lados, lo veo tan y tan difícil. Y Yarimar hasta ahora ha dicho la mayor parte de los problemas. Yo quisiera meter dos cosas. El problema de clase, porque de un lado sí, los populares y los PNPs se metieron en ese carro a los Hamptons para una casa donde no existe, pero sí han podido dominar la política de Puerto Rico siendo populistas, aunque sus intereses económicos son con la élite. Caso, un ejemplo, Pierluisi, the current governor of Puerto Rico, que es el negrito. Anyway.
And let me get Alana to translate a little of that for the monolingual English speakers in the audience, and we've just got a couple of minutes left of the show. Alana.
Well, she was saying that she feels a little bit like a traitor because she was born in Puerto Rico. She went to the University of Puerto Rico. She sees herself as an independentist, but moved to the States, married a gringo, lives in the suburbs. But also a lot of the issues around status are really complicated, and she sees the complications, you know, in a different way now that she lives here. I had a question, which is, I wonder, now that you're, you know, a member of the diaspora, what role do you see for yourself and for the diaspora in general?
Malik, so very briefly, in like 20 seconds.
Okay, and the last one, aside from the class issue with our governors, is the lack of good leadership within the pro-independence political groups of trying to create a good process and include the people to sympathize towards that ideology. To say it in English so everyone understands.
Thank you. Thank you very, very much. All right, I'm going to sneak in a last clip here because, Professor Bonilla, the oversimplified narrative surrounding statehood or sovereignty often focuses on a generational split. And let's see, in the summer of 2019, after the ouster of Puerto Rico's governor and in the wake of an election, a new influencer emerged. Her name is Bad Muncy. And here is one of her viral videos, just 8 seconds worth, because that's what we have time for, which I see you recorded. So here's 8 seconds of Bad Muncy.
Dime, hija, ¿por quién vas a votar? Pues yo quiero un cambio, pero un cambio radical.
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 And do I see correctly that Bad Muncy, the political Instagram influencer, is your grandmother?
That's my 93-year-old grandmother, yes, who has her own Instagram account and a huge following and was visited by one of the gubernatorial candidates right before the election, indeed. And I interview her in the podcast and we talk about her political transformations.
And what did you learn from your grandmother Instagram? And a lot of people, you know, nobody can use Instagram influencer and grandmother in the same sentence except you, I think. But 15 seconds for last word.
Well, we talk about how she went from being the daughter of one of the first populares who voted for the PPD to now being interested in seeing radical change in Puerto Rico. And even if that doesn't necessarily mean independence, for her, it's kind of none of the above. But she, you know, she's had huge transformations. And I mean, just the chance to listen to a 93-year-old sing Bad Bunny and talk about her life, I think is worth awesome. Taking a listen.
Alana Casanova-Burgess, host of the podcast, La Brega from WNYC, and Professor Bonilla is the director at the Center for Puerto Rican Studies at Hunter College. They will be in discussion with several other big thinkers on this. 7 o'clock tomorrow night, tinyurl.com/Sancocho2, tinyurl.com/Sancocho2. Brian Lehrer, a daily politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.